Week 1, Day 5. A memorable relation about the right hand of God. True Christian Religion 136. I saw at a distance 5 gymnasia, each one surrounded by a light from heaven. A purple light, such as there is in the clouds in the morning, before the sunrise on earth, surrounded the first. A yellowish light, like that in the east after sunrise, surrounded the second. A bright light, like that of noonday in the world, surrounded the third, and a moderate light, like daylight when it begins to be tempered by the shades of evening, surrounded the fourth. The fifth stood in actual shade of evening. Gymnasia in the spiritual world are halls where the learned assemble and discuss various arcana that are serviceable to their knowledge, intelligence, and wisdom. Seeing these gymnasia, I felt a strong desire to visit them, and went in the spirit to one of them that was surrounded by the moderate light. And entering, I saw an assembly of the learned, who were discussing with one another what is involved in the statement that the Lord has taken up to heaven and sits at the right hand of God. Mark 16, verse 19. The greater part of the assembly said that this should be understood in accordance with the very words, that the Son does so sit beside the Father. And it was asked why he did so. Some said that the Son had been placed by the Father at his right hand on account of the redemption he had accomplished. Others said that it was from the love that he sat there. Others said that it was in order that he might be the Father's counselor, and being such that he might be honored by the angels. And others that it was because it had been granted him by the Father to rule in his stead, for it is written that all power was given to him in heaven and on earth. But the greater number said that it was in order that he might hear, from the right hand, those from whom he intercedes. For in the church at the present day, all approach God the Father and pray to him to be merciful for the Son's sake. And this causes the Father himself to turn to the Son, that he may receive the Son's mediation. Some, however, said that it is only the Son of God from eternity who sits at the right hand of the Father, that he may impart his divinity to the Son of Man born in the world. Hearing this, I was greatly astonished that learned men, who had already been living for some time in the spiritual world, should be so ignorant of heavenly things. But I perceived why it was so, namely, that from confidence in their own intelligence, they had not suffered themselves to be taught by the wise, but that they might remain no longer ignorant of the meaning of the Son sitting at the right of the Father's hand, I raised my hand, asking them to give ear to a few words that I wished to say on that subject. And as they assented, I said, "Do you not know from the word that the Father and the Son are one, and that the Father is in the Son and the Son in the Father? This the Lord says plainly in John 10, verse 30, and John 14, verse 10 and 11. If you do not believe this, you divide God into two. And when you have done this, you are unable to think about God otherwise than naturally, sensually, and even materially. And this was done in the world since the time of the Council of Nicaea, which introduced the doctrine of three divine persons from eternity, and thereby turned the church into a theater furnished with painted hangings wherein the actors were presenting new plays. Who does not know and acknowledge that God is one? If you acknowledge this in heart and spirit, all that you have said is, of itself, dissipated, or rebounds into the air like nonsense from the ear of a wise man." At these remarks, many were incensed and burned to pull my ears and order me to be silent. But the president of the congregation said with indignation, "This discussion is not about the unity and plurality of God, for we believe in both, but about what is involved in the statement that the Son sits at his Father's right hand. If you know anything about this, speak." I replied, "I will speak, but I pray you suppress the noise." And I said, "To sit at the right hand does not mean to sit at the right hand, but it means God's omnipotence through the human that he assumed in the world. By means of this, he is in last things as well as in first things. By means of the human, he entered and overthrew and subjugated the hells. By means of it, he restored order in the heavens, and thus by means of it, he redeemed both men and angels, and will continue to redeem forever. If you consult the word and are capable of enlightenment, you will perceive that right hand here means omnipotence, as it does in Isaiah. My hand has founded the earth, and my right hand has spanned the heavens. Isaiah 47, verse 13. Yahuwah has sworn by his right hand and by the arm of his strength. Isaiah 62, verse 8. Thy right hand holds me up. Psalm 18, verse 35. Look to the Son, whom thou didst make strong for thyself. Let thy hand be for the man of thy right hand, for the Son of Man, whom thou didst make strong for thyself. Psalm 80, verses 15 and 17. From this it is plain how it is to be understood. The saying of Yahuwah to my Lord, Sit thou at my right hand until I make thine enemies a footstool for thy feet. Yahuwah shall send the staff of thy strength out of Zion. Rule thou in the midst of thine enemies. Psalm 110, verses 1 and 2. This whole psalm treats of the Lord's combat against the hells and his subjugation of them. As the right hand of God signifies omnipotence, it is said that the Lord says to he who sits at the right hand of power, Matthew 26, verses 63 and 64, and at the right hand of the power of God, Luke 22, verses 69. But at this the assembly became tumultuous, and I said, Take heed, for a hand may appear from heaven, and when it appears, as it has appeared to me, it strikes the beholder with an incredible terror of its power. And this has been to me a proof that the right hand of God signifies omnipotence. Scarcely had I spoken when beneath heaven an outstretched hand was seen, at the appearance of which such terror seized them that they rushed towards the doors, and some to the windows to throw themselves out. Some fell down, unable to breathe. But I remained unterrified, and I went out calmly after them, and when some distance away, I turned and saw the building enveloped in a dense cloud. And was told from heaven that this happened because they had spoken from a belief in three gods, and that the former light would return when those who were more sane should meet there. Questions and comments. 1. Section 3 describes Swedenborg's initial reaction to the discussion about what it means for the Son to sit at the right hand of God. What do you think of this reaction? 2. Section 5 says that people became tumultuous when Swedenborg explained that the right hand meant omnipotence. Why do you think that made them mad? 3. What do you make of the outstretched hand that appeared at the end? Why wasn't Swedenborg afraid of it? 4. At both the beginning and the end of this memorable relation, the light is described. How does this help us understand how the spiritual world works?